Coming from the backwoods of New Jersey, welcome to the Jersey Guys Music Podcast, where we feature in-depth music discussions and interviews with special guests from the worlds of hard rock, heavy metal, and AOR music. So settle in and crank it up. Now, here are your hosts, the Jersey Guys themselves, Tom and Mark.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Jersey Guys podcast. I'm Mark Ballow here with my co-host, Tom Coyne. Today, we've got extra special guest, Harry Whitley, the new singer and bass player from the iconic band Asia. Harry, welcome to the show.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. Appreciate your time today. First of all, congratulations on joining Asia.
Thank you very much.
I want to ask you a little bit about how the whole process. How did you come to join the band?
Okay. Well, first, you know, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. You know, it's nice to talk. And so how did Asia happen? Well, during COVID, just before that, I was playing in bands and just sort of doing normal music-y kind of stuff. And then during COVID, obviously, all of the gigs went out the window. That just wasn't happening. So I started posting videos online of just me singing and playing songs and just to sort of pass the time. And I did a couple of Asia covers, and Jeff Downes saw them on Twitter, I think, or on YouTube, and shared them and just sent me a message and just said, look, you know, who are you? Like, what's your story? You know, tell me more. Why are you doing this? No. and that was it. It just sort of, he shared the videos and he said, you know, you did really well. You know, they're really good. Keep posting. And I thought that was it. I just thought that was the, you know, wow, like a cool encounter, a one-off thing. And then it came to summer of last year, 2023, and I had an email off Jeff and QEDG Management, and they manage Yes, and they manage Focus and Asia, and, you know. And basically it was just an email, and they said, we're going to do this John Wetton tribute show. And we think that it'd be good to have you along for it. So I said yes, I didn't really think anything of it, really. I wasn't sure what that entailed. I just assumed I was going to show up and maybe play a song on the piano and sing or something. I wasn't entirely sure what it was.
Yeah.
And then as time ticked on, it became clear that we were going to do this sort of one-off Asia. We were going to play Asia songs with people within the sort of John Wetton universe. So we had Billy Sherwood on bass and Jay Shallon on drums, John Mitchell on guitar, Jeff on keyboards, and me playing additional keyboards and singing. And from that night, it was sort of fairly obvious to quite a few people. I was told that Asia was going to do something. Like, we had to sort of, something was going to happen. So we just left it. I didn't think anything more of it. I just thought, this is an amazing experience. And if that's it, that's it. You know, that's great. It's not as if I sort of forced my way in and said, well, let me do Asia.
Yeah.
So that was it. And it just sort of, we sort of laid that to rest for a little while. And then I had a phone call off Jeff, I think, saying, look, I want to get Asia back together to do something, and I'd like you to do it. Do you want to do it? So I said, let's go for it. And he said, you're all right playing bass as well? So I was like, yeah, that's fine. No problem. We can sort that. And that was it, really. And the sort of the lineup sort of evolved. Cal Palmer is obviously busy doing his Emerson, Lake & Palmer, return of Emerson, Lake & Palmer thing. And Steve Howe's busy with Yes. So Jeff decided that, you know, we've got this opportunity to do Asia. So let's just do it and just get people that were involved in that world. So obviously John Mitchell has got a huge history with John Wetton, going back to the John Wetton band, and he played on some of the Icon stuff. And John's a legend, you know, in his own right with Lonely Robot and Arena and the other 87 bands that he's in. And obviously Virgil Donati as well, who played with UK for a while. So there's a link there with everything John Wetton and Asia related. And, you know, the tour came about and we had the opportunity to do it. So we did it.
Yeah.
You know, and it was great fun. It was great fun.
Nice. Simple as that, right? It sounds so simple.
Yeah. You know, and you know, it, you always think that there's more to it. And, you know, it is a very complicated machine, you know, because it is a business at the end of the day as well. It's not just a sort of, it's not just a band. There's all sorts of rules and you can't do this or you can't do that, or, you know, everything has to be in place, and there's visas and there's, you know, getting all of the people over there. And, you know, it is a very complicated thing. But when it comes down to it, I think the main thing is that we sound good together and that we all get on really well. Like we're a really close family. We all talk all the time as well. It's not as if we can't stand each other. Yeah. I know we've only done one tour, but, you know, we all have a great time together. So there's a lot of camaraderie, and it's really nice.
Yeah. Well, let's kind of go back. I mean, because you're what, 29, 30 years old?
I am. Yeah. 29. Yeah.
29. I mean, so young, right? Tom and I are old guys sitting here, but anyway.
Oh, nonsense.
let's go.
Why do I give you some of my background of what I've seen? You'll change your opinion.
Well, I want to go back and find out a little bit about you before the current Asia thing. Talk about how you got involved in music, because I know I've watched your YouTube channel where you cover a lot of songs that you like just talked about, and you are a multi-instrumentalist. You play all the parts and you kind of put them together there on your YouTube channel. How did you get involved in music, you know, and all that stuff from your early age?
Well, I started with classical piano at about the age of 5 or 6. I had a piano teacher, Tim Jones, and I did all of the classical stuff and all of the jazz stuff with the Royal College of Music. And I was just a piano player. That's all it was, really. I didn't really play anything else. I didn't play anything else for a really long period of time. I didn't sing. I was literally just a piano player. And then we played a gig with sort of just a little local band. And for some reason or another, the singer didn't show up, or we just sort of forgotten that, you know, oh yeah, we need somebody to sing these songs. And I just did it. I just sort of sang. You know, I had no intention to really be a singer. I was quite happy just sat behind the piano, you know, to be brutally honest. And then, so I started singing then, and I sang little bits in bands and sort of did bits and pieces. But I was in a Deep Purple tribute band for a while, played keyboards in that, and a Pink Floyd tribute band. I just played keyboards in that. I probably sang one song in the Pink Floyd thing. That was about it, really.
Well, how do you, as a young guy like you, I mean, you talk about being in a Deep Purple tribute band and a Pink Floyd. How do you get into that music at your young age? We're old guys. We're into this stuff. We know that.
Well, you know, firstly, it's just great, you know, and it's great stuff to play. But like my piano teacher was a big influence with that. He would sort of steer me into sort of, I think you'd like Genesis.
Mm.
Or, you know, okay. I think you'd like Yes or whatever it would be. And Asia, to be honest, he was the one that sort of, when I started getting into keyboards, he was like, I think you'd like Asia because their keyboard player's got loads of keyboards. And like, that's the coolest thing in the world. Like, you know, well, to me it was anyway. But and that's basically how I got into the sort of prog side of stuff. I'm not one of these people that sort of will only listen to prog and that's it. Mm-hmm. You know, I will not listen to anything else. Like, that's not true. I think that's very sort of, I think you've got to listen to a bit of everything. You know, there's no fun. You know, just listen to what you like. A good song is a good song.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if Phil Collins is playing the drums or is singing. You know, whatever it is, it's sort of, you know, if it's good, it's good.
Right.
But then, yeah, I think when I left school, sort of 2016, something like that. I don't know. I can't remember what it is. I started playing a little bit of bass. I just sort of thought, well, you know, I'll just have a go. And then I played a little bit of guitar, and then I sort of got into the drums for a while. So that's basically what it is. At my heart, I am a piano player. That's what I am. But I think if you start on the piano, everything else is easier. I'm not sure whether there's a science behind that, but you've sort of got all of the, you've got the dexterity, you've got the sort of independence, and everything else sort of is easier because of that. And you sort of, you're aware of harmony and you know where the notes are, and you sort of, yeah, it just makes everything a lot easier. So yeah, it's nice to sort of play all the different bits on YouTube, but there's nothing quite like playing with other people, you know?
Yeah.
It's yeah. And I think the Deep Purple thing came about, I think the guitar player in that band saw me play in a bar somewhere. I think that's how that came about. And I think they asked me to do it. They asked me whilst I was still in school and I couldn't do it because I was about to just do my exams.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't think I can. I wish I could, but you know, my parents literally would kill me. So as soon as I left school, that's what I went and did. And you know, I did that for a couple of years, but.
Now, was John Whitten a guy that was always on your radar as a performer? I'll give you a little bit of background. I stumbled on him as a senior in high school in 1976. I was a huge Uriah Heep fan. Mm. And he came in on the High and Dry album, replaced Gary Thayne on bass. Mm. And at the time, I didn't know who he was. And I later got into UK. That was probably even more so than Asia, my favorite thing that he ever did. Mm. So was he somebody that was on your radar, or did later on the light switch go off? Like, gee, I kind of sound like him a lot, or?
It's tricky, you know. I think like my first exposure to Asia would have been the time where Greg Lake was singing with them.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, too. I think, because I think my piano teacher said, you'd like Asia, because it's got that sort of very English choral churchy kind of thing, mm-hmm. but it's still rock. It's a little bit different. It's not proggy prog. There's not sort of,
yeah.
It was AOR prog, really. That's where AOR meets prog.
And I always loved Toto and that sort of side of stuff as well. So it was like the perfect thing for me where it's sort of, it's complicated AOR. I think that's the,
yes, absolutely.
That's sort of what it is. So I think when I would have looked on YouTube or whatever it was for Asia, the only live footage really of like that early time is with Greg Lake.
The Japanese shows, the two shows.
Yeah, yeah. And I didn't know the band, I just assumed that that's what the band was. I wasn't that familiar with the lineup. And then as time went on and I wasn't like a super fan of Asia. I always loved the band. I loved the sound of the band and I loved all of the people that were in the band. But as time went on and I sort of thought, God, John Whitten has got an incredible voice, like just an amazing voice. And equally Greg Lake. I loved Greg Lake's voice. You know, I love both of their voices. And, you know, a lot of people along the way have complimented and said, oh, you sound a lot like John Whitten. Personally, and this is not me trying to be sort of, oh, you know, tell me I'm wrong. Tell me I'm wrong. I don't hear it. I really do not hear it at all. Yeah, like I think the only thing that I would say that I sound like John in regards to is some of our pronunciation of words. I think diction, sometimes I think, oh, yeah, I suppose I say that in a similar way. Mm-hmm. But tonally, I'm not entirely sure, but I think if I'm allowed to say, I think my voice is a good fit for Asia because I've sort of got that loud baritone sort of thing, you know, and nobody can replace John. That's the thing, you know, when this whole thing came about, it's a really tricky position to be put into because I get it from like the fan point of view as well. Like John Whitten is irreplaceable. You can't replace John Whitten.
Yeah.
And that's not my intention either. Like, I'm not here to replace John, but it's sort of, if you want the music to live on and you want to hear it live, this is probably your best option for it, really, you know, and it doesn't change anything. The original stuff is still there. It's not going anywhere. You know, I haven't set fire to it. I haven't gone to Universal Music or whoever it is and said, right, we'll get all of that off the shelf because I'm here now.
Yeah.
You know, that's not the intention here. It's the songs, they're too good to just sit and gather dust. They deserve to be played live.
Now, let me ask you something. If the lineup was to continue on, which I'm assuming it is, would Jeff's idea be to stay strictly with the Whitten period because of your voice, or would he introduce the John Payne period at all, which was a very long... A lot of people don't realize how long John Payne was.
Yeah, it was a long period of time.
Right.
I think... I would assume that it would stay as sort of the Wettin period of Asia, because it's very close to Jeff's heart, a lot of that music. And now that John Wettin isn't here, that music is the sort of that music is the era that doesn't really get addressed. You know, that it's sort of that hasn't really got a home. It sort of it feels a little bit in limbo. I'm not sure what I'm assuming John Payne plays all of the John Payne stuff as well. So that's sort of got its box. But for Jeff, I think it feels like coming home to play that material that he wrote with John and have it sound and feel comfortable. You know, I think that would be the idea. And the lineup is going to continue. You know, we're going to be doing some stuff soon, and there will be new material as well. So it's not as if it's just a tribute act, which, you know, is very easy for people to just sort of say, oh, it's just a tribute act. You know,
I think it's funny when you talked about how, you know, in so many bands today, whether it's you want to talk about Journey or other bands, I mean, like a Styx or something, where they lose that iconic singer that's in the band. But I think the smart thing to do, and like you said, I mean, even though you're saying, I don't think I sound exactly like John Wettin, but you want to, if you want to, in a band like Asia or any iconic band, you want to kind of present that to the fan base, and you want it to have that legacy sound and pay tribute to that. So I think, you know, you're the perfect, I think, addition to for Asia, you know, even though you're saying you don't think you sound like him as much.
Well, you know, that's my opinion, that I don't sound like John Wettin, you know, but then again, from other people's perspective, Jeff and management, they must think that, because they wouldn't use me. It's like they would never ask me to join Yes. Do you know what I mean? Like, they would never get me to sing in Yes, because that's just not the thing.
Yeah.
You have to have somebody that fits. You have to have a voice that fits, whether or not they sound exactly like them. Right. You have to get it in the ballpark, because otherwise it just doesn't sound right. It's like sort of, it's just not going to work. Like, you're never going to hear me sing Starship Trooper like up there, otherwise because my eyes would explode, for one. Right. And I don't sound anything like that sort of tenor, sort of thinner sounding voice. I've got that sort of wide, you know, high baritone sort of thing.
Yeah.
So there is obviously a reason they picked me.
Yeah.
You know, and it's obviously not for my looks made for radio, you know. It's you know, so there has to be a reason there. But yeah, you know.
Well, I think one of the reasons could be, and I like this idea at all, is that you're kind of viewed, at least from my standpoint, as young blood in the band. And I went to the show in Count Basie in Jersey with my son. And my son's 24, and he's been introduced to this music since a child because of me. And he loves Asia. And he really loved the show because of you, because you're very close in age. And he was able to hear, you know, the John Wettin approach and everything. But he saw it now for the first time through the eyes of somebody that was very close in age to him. And when we left the show, he just kept gushing about you. And I think for an older band like Asia, and I wish some of the older bands would do this when they replace band members, is infuse some youth, because you have a bit of a crossover now where you connect more with younger fans.
Yeah, it's, you know, it does sort of broaden the reach for it, sort of thing. I'm not saying that, you know, I don't think it's necessarily like, oh, young people would never listen to this because there's nobody young in the band. I think if people have got good taste, they will listen to it. But from a live perspective as well, and a visual sort of perspective, if you saw something online and you're of that age and you think, oh, they're sort of similar age or whatever, it does draw you in naturally. I think it does.
Absolutely.
Sort of think, you know, what's going on there. And from a sort of stage perspective, having sort of energy, not like the others haven't got energy, but, you know, we do bounce around the stage a lot, and having that sort of fun with it,
right,
it does draw people in. You know, if you're just going to stand there, it depends on the music. It depends on the kind of thing, you know, but it's a rock show at the end of the day, and you want everybody to have a nice time while still respecting the music.
Right.
You know, it's not as if we're not running around to the detriment of the songs. We're running around in addition to sort of performing them well. Yeah. But I'm glad that you had a nice show. What did you think when you were going, before you saw it? What were your
Well, I had already seen, you know, had seen you on YouTube. So I knew, you know, and I explained to my son, because he loved Asia, especially the first two albums. And I said, "Where do you hear this guy?" He said, "He really sounds like Wenton a lot. And, you know, he uses his basses." And and I, you know, he knew that Downes was the, and I said, you know, this is a great show because you're seeing Downes, who's an icon. It's his band.
Yeah.
He wasn't familiar with Virgil Donati, but like I've been familiar with Virgil Donati since the 80s and everything he's
done.
And he knew a little bit of, about the guitar player. And so I, for him to see the show put across like that, he felt like it was like really like seeing like Asia, you know, 20 years before he was even born.
Yeah. That's good. You know, it's always nice to hear what people think of the show. You know, I'm sure people will tell me if they didn't enjoy the show, but it's nice to hear that people, you know, people have a nice time. And it's,
I think one of the,
nice to see the reaction, you know.
One of the things that is kind of a disconnect with a lot of people that don't keep up with music, maybe the way me and Mark do, is that they were unaware of the John Payne era. So like you hear like comments, well, you know, where's Steve Howe? Where is, you know, like as if this lineup just came out of nowhere, and people don't realize it's always been, I mean, at least in my viewpoint, it's always been Jeff Downes' baby. It started as a super group. Everybody knew Carl Palmer and Steve Howe weren't going to last forever in this band because of the bands they were involved with.
Yeah, and, it's, you know, it's not that it's a revolving door, but there's been all sorts of people that have been involved with Asia over the years.
Right, but it's always been Jeff's baby.
Yeah, it's always been Jeff's baby. You know, Jeff and John Wetton were the core songwriters. Not that Steve Howe didn't contribute anything, not that Carl Palmer didn't contribute anything, because they did, you know. Sure. But it is Jeff's baby. It is, you know, especially now with John Wetton not here anymore. And I say every night on stage, I'd say, I promise you there is nothing that I would like more than to be sat in the audience and see John Wetton stood in that place. Because it's true. And that's not me. That's not me saying, oh God, oh, what a great thing to get everybody on your side. It's true. Yeah. I would have loved to see Asia live. I never got the chance. I never got the chance to see UK live. But I would have loved to. I would, if Asia were touring next year, I'd be the first one getting the tickets online. I would be the first in the queue because I love the band, you know, and it's, and now I'm put in a position where I get to carry the baton for however long I carry the baton. You know, we get to keep the music alive, and I get to play with my favorite keyboard player and one of my favorite songwriters, an incredible guitarist who I respect so much and is an amazing friend of mine, and an absolute drumming legend in Virgil, who's the nicest person in the world. Like, the whole team are incredible, and it's just, it's such an honor to be put in that position. But I think if we didn't respect the music, it wouldn't work, you know? So it's such a great position to be in. I've probably gone completely off topic now.
No, you're trying to fight
my case, but, you know,
Well, I know personally myself, and Tom shared his story going to the one of the New Jersey shows with his son, but I actually got to see the Bergen Performing Arts Center show up in Northern New Jersey, Englewood, New Jersey, the night before. And me personally, like you talk about, I actually never saw Asia before. Until I saw you guys that night. And I remember when the announcement came that, you know, they were going to do the Heat of the Moment 2024 tour. I saw some videos on YouTube, like Tom had mentioned, with you. And I the first thing I did was I sent them to Tom, and I'm like, check this guy out. I'm like, he sounds like spot on. You know, this is going to be great. And I was very excited to see that show. And my only complaint on the whole evening, you guys didn't play long enough.
Yeah, well, that's fair. You know, yeah, I really enjoyed the lineup actually for that show.
We'll talk about that a little bit with you guys went out. I mean, it was called the Heat of the Moment 2024 tour. It wasn't just Asia, but you guys took out, and it was kind of cool because it was, I guess, kind of centered around, not centered around, but it had the Roger Dean sort of thing where he, of course, is the iconic artist that did so many album covers, you know, including Asia and everything. But you guys brought out on the tour with you the Dutch band Focus, and of course Martin Turner from Wishbone Ash, the original singer, bass player, and, you know, Curved Air. They did a little acoustic set. How was that tour, you know, for you to be on that, your first tour?
Amazing. You know, amazing. I'd always loved Focus as well. I remember, like, back in the day, you know, learning the piano and stuff, and And my piano teacher would say, oh, yeah, have you heard this song? Like, it's got yodeling in the middle of it. Or, like, listen to this song, Sylvia. Like, it's so good. It's so good. And Focus were, you know, sort of celebrating their Focus 12 release. They just released an album. It was great to have them with us. Martin Turner is just a legend. Sure. Wishbone Ash, you know, all that stuff.
And John went and played with Wishbone Ash, too.
He did, yeah, yeah. And it, you know, all of those guys are great. I saw them a few weeks ago. They were playing a few miles down the road, and I went and said hello. And Curved Air, you know, Sonia and Kirby and Greg, you know, that acoustic set is such a nice build-up. And I think the variety as well is really interesting. I think, you know, starting with that acoustic Curved Air,
yeah,
Martin Turner with his sort of more bluesy sort of bluesy prog. I don't know. It's Wishbone Ash have always been like a sort of, I'm never quite sure how to describe what they are, but they're sort of,
I've been listening to them for 50 years and they are one of the hardest bands to put across to what their sound is.
They are really unique. Like they're sort of like a status quo, but with a prog that it's
and
really,
they've had so many different eras of sound.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, they really crossed the gamut with so many different sounds. It's
And the band that Martin's got now is incredible. Like they're so good. And the same with Focus, you know,
the two guys, in the bass player and the guitar player in Focus. How good were those guys?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Menno and Udo are just,
wow.
They're great. You know, they're so funny and they're all so lovely. That's the thing, is like everybody on the tour was just so nice, you know. But they're all incredible as well. You know, they're at the top of their game. And then, yeah, so that was the whole package. It was sort of designed. We had the Roger Dean Art Gallery with us as well. So showing the artwork, and you can purchase, you know, artwork or whatever you wanted to do.
Picked one up.
Oh, look at that. It was amazing, you know, and it's sort of, obviously this is my first tour as well. It's not just my first sort of tour with Asia. This is my first tour, you know, so it was a very unique experience. And what a way to start, you know. It's sort of, yeah, just amazing, you know. It's sort of, which show did you say that you came to?
I saw the show at the Bergen Performing Arts Center in Englewood, New Jersey,
July
9th, and then Tom saw you the next night down in Red Bank, New Jersey, on the 10th.
Count Basie.
Nice, yeah, Count Basie, I think we had a bit of a monster drive before that, I remember. When we were in that sort of area, the drive, because I think we were in, did we play Canada just before that or something? I don't know what it was, but it was, there was a lot of long drives.
Yeah, well, I think you did about, 3 weeks in the States here?
Yeah, just maybe four, actually.
Four, okay.
I think we arrived on the 1st of July, and I think we left on the 30th or something like that, like that. It was amazing. It was amazing. Bring it on. Next one.
Yeah.
Come on, let's go.
Well, what's the plans there? Are you guys looking at maybe doing like a European tour to reintroduce the fans over there?
Yeah, nothing's off the cards. I mean, I'm assuming we will come back to America and probably do the other side, you know, the not you side.
Yeah.
You've had enough of that now. You can wait a while.
No, we need it back again.
All right, then we'll come. Maybe Japan and sort of Asia, in Asia, mm-hmm. and Europe, you know, nothing's off the table, you know, and we are planning stuff as we speak. And Jeff was very open about the, speaking about that we're going to be working on new music together. And there's, you know, I think it's too much fun to just hang around. We've got to do something, you know. It's, there are plans to do stuff. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me ask you about this, because we know that John Wetton and Jeff Downs were, you know, not only the iconic Asia guys, but they were obviously the chief songwriters in the band. Are you a person, all the instruments you play and everything, are you also a songwriter?
Yeah, I've written bits and pieces, you know. It's we are all going to collaborate on this, on the new stuff as well, so that's going to be really interesting. Okay. And I think what I think will help is that I grew up with that sort of music.
Mm.
So I sort of, I get what they're doing. You know, I get the Asia-isms. You know, I hear it all the time and I think, that's so Asia. Or if I hear another song that isn't Asia, I just think, that's such a Jeff thing to do. Or that's such, you know, you can hear it. Like, and you can hear the crossover between stuff in UK, like things like Night After Night, that live recording. There's a lot of Asia in that actually as well. And you sort of, you get to see what one person brought and what another person brought, you know. So it's going to be really interesting, actually. I'm really looking forward to getting started with that. And now Jeff's back home from the Yes Tour.
Right. Yeah. I think it was about a month after you guys played a friend of mine saw him with Deep Purple.
Straight back out. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Is the UK end of Wetton something that you would try to maybe incorporate in some of the music? Because we've talked about UK a lot. That was actually my most favorite thing that he was ever involved in.
Yeah, I loved
UK. I was a massive UK fan. Would that be maybe sound like you touched on it a little bit, and I've always wondered that since I heard that you were fronting the band. Would that be, not that you're going to make the band sound like UK, but maybe...
No, but...
Incorporate some of his vocal style. He sang, you know, like different vocal styles.
There is different eras of John. Like you can hear, absolutely. Like he does sing very differently in Asia. And I think he did get better and better. Like some of the reunion Asia albums, his voice is just, I love his voice in sort of Phoenix to Gravitas, that sort of, that last run of albums, especially Triple X. I love that album. That was my first Asia album, really, was that album.
Wow.
And his voice is great because it's got that sort of, it's the same thing when I think about Greg Lake. I prefer Greg Lake's voice when he's older. I love that sort of, just that thickness of his voice. Like, I love that sort of thing. That's not saying that I don't like his voice when he was younger, but it's just what you prefer. And I think the same thing with John Wetton. In UK, he's very different to King Crimson. And he's obviously sort of learning on the job as well. You know, not to say that he can't sing, but, you know, he learns how to use his voice. I think that's the thing. And it's the same. I know John Mitchell says about Trevor Rabin a lot, about Trevor Rabin learned to play the guitar on the job. You know, not that he wasn't a great guitar player, but as time goes on, he's just a monster. Like, he just gets better and better. Like, you just think, where, you know, and the same's true with John Wetton. You know, I think it's true of everybody. It's just how aware you are of that. You know, I think if you listen sort of with an open mind, rather than saying, well, I love King Crimson, so I'm not going to listen to Asia because that's not what John Wetton is. But like, if you look at it from a musician standpoint, you can really see how people develop and like how they're different. And I'm sure like the next tour that we do, I will probably approach it differently because you learn, oh, right, okay, I should do this like this. We always do things like that. Like, you'd come off stage and you think, oh, I wish I would have done that in the middle of that song. That would have been really good. And then you do it the next time and you think, actually, that doesn't work. Why am I doing that? Let's try something else. So it's always a development. And, you know, even on the road, we were trying different things like Time Again. We had like three different intros for that. Like, we did the standard, just the way it starts on the album. And then Virgil was like, well, what if I do a fill into that? And then it started off with, well, what if I just do a groove and then a fill into it? And it's things like that just sort of make it different. Like, people are like, what is this? What's this? What's this? Yeah. Oh, it's that. And it's just that excitement. You know, if you want to listen to the, you know, the album is still there. You don't have to, it doesn't have to be played like that. You know, it's you know, but then again, you have got to respect it. You can't just be like, well, I'll tell you what, we'll do Heat at the Moment, but we're going to do it as a reggae song. Like, right. that's not going to happen. But, you know, you can still play around with things and add a chorus in. I know for Voice of America, when we were rehearsing in Jeff's studio in South Wales, Jeff said, well, I've got a keyboard thing that I've written that isn't on the original, but he said, I just like the chords. And we just incorporated this keyboard solo into the middle of Voice of America. And it's like, you know, nobody threw anything at us of being like, well, that's not on the original, so why are you doing that?
Yeah.
You know, so it's nice to just, you know, play about with it and sort of not be constricted and stuck to the thing. But yeah, like you say, you know, John's voice was very different throughout all the eras and especially UK. So I'm sure, because I'm a fan of all of that stuff, I'm sure some of it will come out, probably whether it's consciously or unconsciously. I think, you know, it will just sort of seep out. Yeah. And I think Jeff writes in a way that makes that stuff come out as well. It's more than just a one-man thing. I think it takes the two of them. Like, if you listen to John Wetton's solo stuff, it's very different to the stuff, like the Icon stuff that he did with Jeff. They bring something out of each other that they don't do individually. It's like this magical thing.
Yeah.
And Asia is the same. You know, Asia, they write for Asia. So it's going to be really interesting. I'm really looking forward to it, actually.
That's great.
Did you ever see the UK reunion show that's on DVD?
I did see the DVD. I think it's just been remastered, hasn't it? Or released
yeah,
or something.
The one with Marco Minimum is
Marco
the drum.
Minimum's
yeah,
on drums.
That show was unbelievable.
Yeah, it's incredible. I really wish I'd have seen UK because I remember hearing the Night After Night live in Japan or something or Tokyo.
I know
Tokyo's Japan. You know, nobody shoot me. wherever it is, whatever they labeled it as. And I remember the keyboard solo that's in the middle of Night After Night. I was just like, this is the best thing I've ever heard in my life. It's so powerful. And John Wetton's playing is so pushing like a tank.
Yep.
With Terry Bozzio on drums. And you just think, and even
it was an incredible band.
Yeah, an incredible band. Like I've some of the bootleg stuff of sort of UK One, I suppose, with Bill Bruford and Alan Oldsworth. Some of that stuff's amazing. Like I just think, what an amazing band. Like it's awful, and I got to meet Bill Bruford because he came out of retirement for the John Wetton tribute show, and he played drums with Guy Pratt on the night and Phil Manzanera, who else was it? And Chris Difford from Squeeze. They played Let's Stick Together, and I was just like, that's Bill Bruford. Like that is Bill. Like there he is. There's Bill Bruford. It's just
That's really like the only time that Holdsworth has really stepped into like a rock genre. It's like when people talk about him, a lot of like the hardcore people maybe even mention the UK stuff because it's not that whittly diddly fusion
that
most of his fans go nuts for, and they were able to get him just for one album but more in a prog rock format.
And I think he really fits in that world as well because he's very chordal and he does stay out of the way. Like you think of Alan Holdsworth and I think to people who don't know the music, you think of Alan Holdsworth and you just think it's solos. Like it's just constant solos, weird, complicated time stuff.
Self-indulgent, yeah.
Yeah, but it isn't. Like it's like when people say, oh, what's jazz? And they think it's just noise. Or what, you know, that people don't, if you don't listen to it, you don't know what it is. I remember I was teaching somebody piano once and they said, oh, I want to get into jazz. And I said, oh, well, what are you listening to? And they're like, oh, Rage Against the Machine. I said, well, maybe you should start listening to some jazz first because you're not going to, you know, you've got
that's
to
a
immerse
big transition,
yourself in the
yeah.
world. You know, you got to immerse yourself in that world. Right. And obviously Virgil played with Alan Holdsworth for years and years. Right. You know, I think that's where I first heard Virgil, I think.
Well, he played in a band called Ring of Fire for a long time.
Yeah.
With Tony McAlpine.
Yeah.
And I know him from Southern Sons.
And that he was in Southern Sons also. Right.
I remember seeing a clip of Virgil on YouTube as well. I showed him on the bus, actually. I found it.
Yeah.
And I said, Virgil, who's this drummer? Who's this drummer? And it's a clip from, I don't know, the early 80s, something like that. And it looks like a sort of New Year's party or something. And it's Virgil playing all of these Steely Dan songs with this club band. And Virgil was like, oh, my God, yeah, that's like so-and-so, so-and-so. And it was in Sydney. And we used to do this, we had a residency in this place and like, but it's very different. Like you don't hear Virgil play that sort of thing. Mm. And that was really exciting for me as well when I found out that Virgil was going to be joining Asia.
He was in another band before Southern Sons. I can't think of the name of the band. It was kind of like a pop. It was a pop.
Yeah, they were an Australian band.
I have the CD. I can't think of the name of the band now. It's annoying me. But he was in that.
Yeah, and I think
He had like a new wave haircut. They were kind of, they looked like new wave, but they sounded more like pop AOR.
Yeah, it was. I can't think what the band was.
I have the CD. I can't think of the name of the band either.
He reunited with them not so long ago, I think.
Oh,
like
really?
One-off thing in Australia or something. But it's that was something that was really exciting for me with Asia joining Virgil. No, Virgil joining Asia was hearing him play groove. You know, not that that's not what he's about. I'm not saying that. It's sort of, but Virgil's thing is very different to Asia. You know, he's not the sort of just sit there and 4-4, you know, pounding bass drum thing. So it was really interesting to see how he was approaching that. And I think Virgil did an amazing job. Like,
oh, when I heard he was the drummer in that, I was over the moon because I've known him for decades and always loved his work.
Yeah. And, you know, he's a great name as well, you know, obviously, like, he's very well-known in that community. He came straight off the Asia tour and did his drum clinic tour of China, playing to, like, a billion people or whatever it was, you know, so he's always kept busy. I spoke to him yesterday, actually, and he's so lovely, but he's amazing. I love that. I love that about all of these people, that they're incredible at what they do, but they're just lovely people. Yeah. It makes it so much easier. Like,
well, well, for me as a fan, I him coming in the band, because I think a lot of people were hoping it was going to be Carl Palmer,
yeah,
obviously. But he was a perfect fit, because when I heard he was in the band, I'm like, oh, that's good. I mean, that's like, yeah, you know, it kind of makes you not pining for Carl Palmer so more, because you got a guy that, you know, he's a big time established name in his own right. And it works.
I think the same thing with the Beat tour that's currently going on with Adrian Belew and Steve Vai and Danny Carey and Tony Levin. I've already said that. But they're playing all of the 80s King Crimson stuff. And they sound incredible. Like, they just sound amazing.
I bet.
And I think, oh, what would it be like if Robert Fripp was playing? And then you see Steve Vai and you think, well, you know.
Exactly. Right. That's a good analogy. Yeah, it's sort
of, you know, it's like, well.
Six
of
one, half a dozen of another. Yeah,
you want to hear the music. You want to hear the music. And people will say, you know, oh, why are they using the Asia name? It's like, why wouldn't we use the Asia name?
Well, that's the argument I've had with people too.
Yeah, you know,
if you really know the band, you know it's always been Jeff Downs. Anybody that followed the band, I remember when the band came out with the first record and they were talking about this band, you knew Howe and Carl Palmer weren't going to stay there forever. I mean, you know, they were two huge established bands.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, you know, it's not that they don't love that music, and Steve was interviewed the other day and said some lovely things about me, which, you know, was an honor, you know, it's amazing. You know, when we spoke to Steve about this and, Steve has got, yes is Steve's baby.
That's what I'm saying. Right.
And it's the same with Jeff, you know, Jeff Asia is Jeff's baby.
Exactly.
Cal is the only one left from Emerson, Lake and Palmer.
Right.
I love Emerson, Lake and Palmer.
Me too.
I absolutely love Emerson, Lake and Palmer. I love everything about them. All of those people that are in there, they are gods. You know, yeah. Keith Emerson, Greg Lake, Cal Palmer. It's as best as it's as good as it can ever be. Sure. You know, they're the ultimate trio. And Cal is the only one left. And I think Cal is doing a fantastic thing by keeping that music alive as well. You know, everybody has got their job to do. And this, not to be morbid, and, you know, I'm not saying that everybody is Father Time here, but these people, you know, time goes on. You know, the sands of time are eroded by the rivers of constant change, as the Genesis lyric goes. And, you know, it's that music, those people are not going to be here forever. So I think they should keep it alive whilst they are here, because when they're gone, I hate to say it, like, they're gone.
Yeah.
Like Greg Lake. I'll never get to see Greg Lake sing. I hate that, because I love his voice. Keith Emerson, I'll never get to see Keith Emerson play. And he's one of my favorite keyboard players. You know, John Wetton, I'll never get to see him sing or play bass.
Yeah.
He's like one of my favorites. And it's sad, but the music stays there. So why wouldn't we play it?
Sure.
You know, Greg Lake in the 90s was still real.
Amazing.
I saw them in the 90s with
the Dream Theater.
Theater opened up.
Oh, yeah.
And
amazing.
He sounded really good. Maybe better than he did in the early 70s.
Well, it's like people always say, oh, Black Moon isn't a real ELP album. You listen to something like Affairs of the Heart, which Jeff Downs co-wrote.
Oh, that's a great album, yeah.
And that song's amazing. You know, From This Fire, There's No Returning. Mm-hmm. You know, and you just think, God, yes, that's so Greg Lake. I love that sort of thing. You know, when you hear a lyric and you think, oh, yes, that's what it's all about. And the thing is, nobody will write a lyric like that anymore because he's not here.
Right.
It's so sad. Like, I think, but you know, the music is still there and it lives on. And that's the whole idea behind Asia. I'm not here to replace John Wenton and be like, well, John, you know, that's in the past now. Here's this new guy.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, nobody cares about me. And I'm not saying they should. You know, it's John Wenton. You know, that's what that music is. Mm. But I'm here as the conduit or the vessel or whatever you want to say, whatever fruity way you want to explain it. If you want to hear it sung well and played well by four people, you know, or like the other three and me, of it being played really well, you know, that's what we're doing, you know. And people, the reaction every night was amazing. To see people having an amazing time was great, because I don't mind saying I was absolutely terrified before this tour happened. All the rehearsals went so well. Like, it sounded amazing. We had about 3 days rehearsal without Virgil, where we just went through the vocals and everybody learned the backing vocal parts and, you know, worked out the arrangement. And then we had 2 days with Virgil, and then we had 1 day rehearsal in America before the first show. And I was absolutely terrified on that day. We played the Ridgefield Playhouse first, and for about 2 hours before the show, I was just walking around the car park outside, just pacing up and down, pacing up and down, seeing all these people coming in, thinking, "Oh God, like what have I got myself in for here?" You know, I was absolutely terrified. But then after about two songs, when I could make myself actually look down and see people there, and people were sort of giving the thumbs up and sort of having an amazing time, I was like, oh, actually, this will be okay. You know, there was, not to say that there wasn't sort of terrifying moments, like when we played in, Niagara Falls. Mm-hmm. We played the something arena, I can't remember what it was called, Falls View. And that was thousands of people. Like, that is, and that was terrifying. I remember walking out thinking, oh my God, what are we going to do? Like, you know, I was trying to remember where G was on the bass. I was like, which one's G? You know, it's, not that bad, but you know what I mean? It's still scary. And like, the simplest things go out of your head. Like, we opened with Wildest Dreams. And the first note, you start questioning yourself. You think, actually, is that the first note? I'm looking where John's got his hand on the fretboard. I was like, is this all right? Is this where we go? But you just overthink things, you know, and especially for me, like, I get the, what am I trying to say? I understand the reverence behind the band, and I understand that people, not that they're there to sort of catch me out. They're not there to sort of be like, gotcha, you messed up. But, you know, I've got something to prove. You know, the others have all got a pedigree. I'm the one that's coming into this thing replacing somebody that they love. Well, not replacing, because I'm not replacing John Wetton.
I'm
covering. You know, I'm like the sort of, I'm the supply teacher that's come in. You know, they're not in for the day. It's a very tricky position to be in, and that played on my mind a lot. Like, I won't tell you how many sleepless nights I had in the lead up to Asia, thinking, you know, this, if they don't like this, it's me that gets, you know, I'm the one that people are going to have a go at, because it's the voice, you know, it's the voice of the band. It's the person that they're probably looking at the most, because it's where the songness is coming from.
Sure.
You know, so it was really scary, actually, you know, but I wouldn't change anything about it, because it was amazing. Such an incredible experience. And I can't wait, you know, for more.
Excellent. Well, let me ask you about this. You talked about the music living on. But let's talk about the instrument living on. You got to play John Wetton's personal basses for this tour that you just did. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, when they asked me to sing, I said yes, obviously. And then they said, do you want to play bass as well? And we can keep it as the four, you know, Asia, four piece, you know, power. And I said, yeah, that's fine. I said, I've only got one bass, you know, I'm not sure whether... You know, is that, that'll be all right, won't it?
Yeah.
And then I had a message from QEDG management, and they said, we've had an idea, and let us know what you think. We've spoken to Lisa Wetton, who's John's widow, and Dylan Wetton, John's son, and we think it'd be really nice if you played John's basses on stage. And I said, well, wow. I mean, thank you. Like, what an honor. And I said yes, obviously. So I was like, yeah, let's do it. I've still got them. They're still here. You know, they're hanging around. And it was amazing. You know, to sort of to have those basses, and it does add a level of sort of authenticity to it as well. I think
absolutely
that John is sort of with you. As well, that's the thing. It's like, sort of, a lot of people said to me, you know, John would be really proud of this. Or like, people said really nice things, and Lisa and Dylan were really supportive about the whole thing, because I get as well that it must be really hard from that perspective as well, to see the band carry on without your husband, or you know, without your father, you know, their legacy carrying on without them. That must be really tough, you know, to see that sort of thing. It's sort of, Yeah, and but they were so supportive about the whole thing. And Lisa got in touch and she said, "Right, okay, you're going to use John's bases. I'll send you pictures of them all. Pick which ones you want. Just pick which ones you want." There was no sort of like, "Well, I don't want you to play that one, or maybe don't do this one, or don't do that." And da da da. She was just like, "What do you want? Let me know which ones do you want." There we go. That's
wow.
You know. And actually, the day that I picked the bases up was the first day that I met Steve Howe as well. So I picked them up from a Yes show. Yeah. Because the manager, so we live, me and Lisa probably live like 250 miles away from each other. Not that that's not a problem, but the deal was that the manager would go and pick them up, and he said, I'll bring them to you. And Martin came to a Yes show, and he said, come to the Yes show. You can see the show and get the bases. It's all good. And there was Steve Howe, you know, sort of, and Martin was like, this is Harry. He's going to be taking over. And he was like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So that was lovely as well. And it's an honor really to play those basses every night.
I bet.
You know, and people like seeing them as well. You know, it's like, and I'd make a thing depending on which one I was playing. I've got two of them. There's one is the bass that is on the Astra album. So it's the original, John's original Zon bass from 82 or something, 83, I think it was made. And then the Zon that is on the Asia Live in Tokyo from the reunion era.
Mm.
I've got that one as well, because they're very similar. That's what I went with, really. I wanted two basses that were similar so that one could be a backup. I didn't want two wildly different basses, and then something went wrong in the middle of a show and it's like, oh, this bass is a lot the higher output or lower output, or it doesn't quite sound the same. I wanted sort of familiarity, really. And they're just such great basses, you know, aside from the connection, you know, obviously it's amazing to play them. And obviously when I took them out of the cases, they were still strung up. And I was like, oh, God, thinking John was the last person to touch these strings. And yes, I did keep the strings. that's such a sort of, it's quite spooky, actually. I remember I put them on the kitchen unit. And I opened the cases the first time and I was like, whoa, it sort of hit me. It was real at that point. You know, that was the first moment. Even though I knew the tour was happening and, you know, it was like, oh, we got to go to London and get the visas and all of that sort of stuff. The business side of it was still going on. That day that I saw the bases and I picked the bases up was the moment that it sort of became real. It was quite spooky, but it was incredible, incredible. And having them travel around America with us and play those songs again, you know, it's just incredible.
Will you continue to use them going forward?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think they're part of the sound, you know. We're not going to get into the debate of, oh, this guitar sounds different to this one. And there's no, you know, it doesn't matter what you put a pickup in. There's a lot of argument about that online, but those basses are the sound of Asia. Like they're so John. You know, I know he had different periods. I think when he was playing with John Mitchell, he was using Fernandez guitars, and, you know, he played a P bass in UK and he played a Rickenbacker at some point. And, you know, there's all sorts of different.
There was a black bass that he used to use in UK later on during the I don't know what.
Yeah, it was a Gibson Thunderbird, I think, or something like that. Sort of.
It was all
weird,
black. It was all about.
Like an off-centery kind of.
Exactly.
Thing and yeah. that was a really iconic bass, and there's some footage of him playing that with Asia as well.
Oh really?
Yeah that's such a thing. But it's sort of these Zon basses, they just sound like Asia. They've got that sort of that honk and that push, and they're really easy to play, which, you know, for me is that's a blessing, so I don't mess up too much. But yeah, you know, from the basses made everything easier, but from the vocal side of it was tough. You know, it was really tough because you know that people are depending on you performing every night. And luckily, I think it turns out I'm quite consistent. I think that's nice to know, is that you're never quite sure. I think that's the thing. And
well, I can only speak for the show that I was at
in
Count Basie. And I'm not saying it because you're a guest on the show. Everybody, people sitting around me, when you leave in the theater, everybody was floored. Everybody loved it. You know, you hear people talking and, you know,
yeah,
it went over really, really well.
Oh, good. Good. It's tricky, you know, and I know that everybody was a little bit apprehensive before the tour because it was my first tour, and you're never sure how your voice is going to hold up. You know, I can play 2-3 gigs a week at home, and it's fine. You know, you have a break between each show or whatever, and you just, you know, you do your little bit. But a tour is very different. You're in a completely new place. There's a lot of traveling. There's not a lot of rest. And, you know, things can go wrong. You can just go for it one night, and maybe you can't hear yourself quite as well, and you blow a gasket, and then you're done for. Like, you sort of, you've got no hope. Like, what are you going to do? But luckily, I'd say we learned that my voice was quite consistent. You know, it's still hard going, and this tour was quite intense. There wasn't a lot of days off, and we drove everywhere, so it's not as if we were sort of lounging around in limos, and, you know, those days are gone for bands, unfortunately.
Right.
But, you know, there's a lot of travel involved, and you've got to meet a lot of people, so then your risk of sort of getting ill goes up, you know. And that was something I was very conscious about as well, is that I wanted to make sure that I met people, you know, after the show. So, like, me and John Mitchell would always go out after the show and stand at the front of the theatre and sign whatever people wanted to sign, or say hello, or do whatever. Because I thought that was really important for people to know that I'm not sort of, I do the show and then I'm locked away, I don't want to be bothered sort of thing. I don't, you know, which is not the case. You know, I like knowing what people think.
Well, that's a way to win over a new fan base too. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, interact. And I'm a fan as well. You know, that's the thing, is like, I'm a fan of all of these people that I've stood on stage with, and I want to know what they thought of the drum solo in that bit, or I want to know what they thought of the guitar solo in Time Again or whatever. You know, I like knowing what people think. And this is probably a detriment as well, really, is that I was told from day one, do not look online. Do not look on Asia fan pages or whatever it is. Don't do it. Don't look at reviews. Just don't do it. But unfortunately, I can't. I have to look. I have to look. And luckily, touch wood, it's been all right. You know, it's been all right. It's been amazing. There's obviously going to be a few people that are like, oh, I hate you. Mm. And it's like, you know, you can't avoid that. But for the most part, people have been really, really supportive. And that's amazing. And like, people would come up after the shows and say, oh, this is great. This is my, you know, 87th time seeing Asia, or this is my first time seeing Asia. And they would all say really nice things. You know, nobody put a cross on my back, or sort of, you know, a pie in my face. You know, yeah. It was amazing. You know,
well, there's two different types of Asia fans. There's the fans, and I've encountered them too, in person and online. The ones that know the first album or two and were fans of that, and their first thing is, where's Carl Palmer? Where's Steve Howe? Yeah, those fans. And then there's the fans that are hardcore, like the two of us, that are aware of the John Payne era. We're aware that, you know, guys like, Mandy Meyer was a guitar player.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Pat Thrall was a guitar player. And we're aware of this. So, you know, you're more open to, okay, this is a different lineup, but, you know, it's a credible lineup. And, you know, I want to embrace it. And that's how we both felt, you know. And I think that's most fans. You're always going to get the snobs that still living in 1982 and 1983 that, well, you know, where is he? How come he's not there? But I think most of the fans realize that this has been, you know, a long saga with Asia for decades.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is the latest rendition, and it's a real exceptionally credible one.
Yeah, I think, you know, and I think it's, I think we bring something different, but not too different as well. I feel whenever I've listened back to footage, I've seen what people have put on YouTube, or, you know, we recorded a few shows, and it's from an instrumental point of view, just listening to the band without me singing, it's really powerful. Like, it's a really strong rock Asia. You know, it's sort of, it's different, you know, that it's got this sort of drive that, not that you wouldn't expect from Asia, but it's very sort of modern sounding as well. It does bring everything a bit more sort of into the fold. And, you know, it's John Mitchell is very sort of aware, like, he produces a lot of stuff as well, so he's got his finger on the pulse musically as well. So I think, and his guitar playing is very sort of influenced by all sorts of different people, so he's quite Trevor Rabin, and he's sort of Al Di Meola, and he's Andy Summers, and so he comes from it from a sort of slightly different angle as well. So that's really nice. And Virgil likewise. Everybody's got different influences, but they still respect the music. So you get this sort of new version of Asia, literally,
right,
musically and band-wise. But yeah, people, everybody had such lovely things to say. And the thing is, nobody said anything bad to me to my face, you know. So people will only do it when they're not stood right in front of you. So, right, you know, that doesn't count. You have to say, if you didn't enjoy it, you have to tell me to my face.
Right. Well, I want to ask you, and we've talked all about Asia and everything, and we talked earlier about how you have your YouTube channel, Harry Whitley Official. People can check that out. But you do a ton of covers, and not only Asia songs, but I wanted to especially point out, I know you do things like King Crimson and ELP and Genesis. But one thing, Tom and I, and I had to compliment you on this, you did an Outfield song.
Your Love.
Oh my God.
We're both huge Outfield.
Huge
fans. Outfield.
Oh, huge fans. Great band. Amazing band.
Yeah.
You know, John Mitchell's a huge fan of them as well.
Is he really?
You know, it's they're a great band. Such an underrated album, that first album.
Oh, yeah.
It's great songs. Great playing, great voice as well. Very different voice as well. You know, it's very unique.
Yeah.
You know, it's I love that song.
Excellent. I had to compliment you on that one.
Thank you.
Cover.
Thank you.
And anything else, Tom?
I think we covered it all. Yeah.
Hey, well, amazing. Harry, I mean, we really appreciate the time here today.
Anytime.
Great stories, great stuff. So before we let you go, I know I don't want to put you on the spot. Any timeline of anything as far as Asia activity?
Asia activity. I'll just say soon.
Okay.
You will hear about it soon.
Fair enough.
Dot, dot, dot.
Okay.
2025.
That's the one.
Okay. Sounds good to me. Harry, appreciate the time here today. Everybody, Harry Whitley, new singer, bass player, Asia. Thanks for talking to us.
You're very welcome, man.
Pleasure talking to you.
Anytime. Anytime.
Take care.
Take care.
You too. Take care.
Bye.
Thank you.
There's no disguising it. It really comes as no surprise to find that you've planned it all along.